You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Now, before we take a walk into the briefing room, where we're going to talk about what's going on, my view from the blue, I want to remind you that you can find me on Facebook at the Voice of American Law Enforcement, on Twitter at LT Randy Sutton, and also I would love for you to go to the Wounded Blue Facebook page, like it, follow it, and check out thewoundedblue.org. Now, let's take a walk into the briefing room, where I'm going to give you my view from the blue. Lots of things happening in law enforcement today. And the most constant is the danger facing American law enforcement officers. In the End of Watch segment today, you will hear me read the name of an officer who, even while off duty, his commitment to the people of the Los Angeles area resulted in his death. There's a terrible headline that I saw this week. North Carolina trooper paralyzed from the neck down after pursuit. Doctors report Highway Patrol trooper Christopher Wooten suffered a complete spinal cord injury at the top of the spine, which is resulting in paralysis from the neck down. And this was the quote from Colonel Glenn McNeil from the Highway Patrol. While we have joined together in praying for a speedy recovery, I deliver this message with a heavy heart. Doctors have been monitoring Chris's recovery around the clock while providing the best medical care and attention for his condition. Unfortunately, after the performance of several medical procedures, which included surgery to fuse and decompress his C1 to C5 vertebrae and stabilize the spinal column, it was determined that Chris suffered significant spinal cord trauma during the crash. At the moment, the surgeons are classifying the injury as complete spinal cord injury, which is resulting in paralysis from the neck down. You know, we hear all the time the attacks on law enforcement officers where serious injuries and death occurs. The shootings that take place, the ambushes. In fact, just today, there was another ambush I'm going to talk about in just a minute. But the reality is that officers are losing their lives and getting seriously catastrophically injured in many other ways as well. And they don't get the attention that the violent confrontations do. And yet, the sacrifice is the same. Actually, traffic accidents kill more cops than I think any other cause. Because remember this, guys, police officers are on the road. They're all the time. I mean, they spend the majority of their shift on patrol. They are not only susceptible to the normal traffic accidents, but then there's the high-speed pursuits. There's Code 3 driving where they're trying to get to an emergency call. These are very hazardous conditions. And the unfortunate reality is that causes tremendous amount of traumatic injuries and also death. So the danger is not just the man-made danger of physical attacks, but many other dangers as well. But let's talk about the physical attacks for just a moment. Okay, just today, just early this morning, DeKalb County officer was shot multiple times after he was ambushed. What happened was a suspect, who has been identified but is still at large, killed his significant other. Someone reported shots fired. As the officer approached the house, the suspect had left the house where the body of his significant other was and hid, waiting for the cops to get there. And when they did, he opened fire, hitting one of the officers numerous times. that officer is now facing catastrophic injury or possibly death. The suspect is still at large. Now, these ambushes of law enforcement officers seem to be increasing. The willingness for many criminals to engage in a firefight from a surreptitious position seems to be rising. I don't know what the phenomena is that's causing it, but it is certainly a major cause for concern. Now, let's talk about physical attacks on law enforcement officers for a minute. The startling statistic is that last year, approximately 56,000 law enforcement officers across the United States were physically attacked. That's an astounding number. Now, that doesn't mean that they all received significant injuries, but it does mean that there were physical confrontations where officers used force and had force used against them 55,000 to 56,000 times. Now, what makes this so startling is that out of the, say, 800,000 to 900,000 law enforcement officers there are in this entire country to police 330 million people, that number includes office personnel, includes investigators, includes administrators. So of the officers who are actually working the streets, that number, 800,000, 900,000, I'm going to guess is somewhere around 500,000. And more than 10% of those officers were physically attacked last year. That, you know, we're talking everything from punching to gunfire. So the danger that is facing these men and women is ever increasing. Now we have the highly publicized confrontations all over America. Look at what has happened in New York City with police officers having physical attacks on them, where people will surround them and dump water on them or whatever is in buckets, could be anything that they put in there. And the officers, in a very highly publicized video that went viral, didn't even respond to it. They just walked away. Now, I got to tell you, if you assault a law enforcement officer, there must be consequences. And there should be consequences. And when police officers don't defend themselves because of the political environment, then what we are seeing is a complete breakdown and lawlessness in America that I think is unprecedented. I am a strong believer in the warrior spirit of policing. Now, this spirit has been under attack by politicians, by the media, by the punks who sit in their parents' basements and do social media posts. And there's been a political movement afoot, even by law enforcement leadership itself in many, many areas, to walk away from the warrior spirit and be a kinder, gentler police profession. And that sounds really good on paper. That sounds really good in a soundbite. But the realities of the dangers that are facing these men and women, they call for strong police response. And if you aren't prepared to fight and win, then then you probably shouldn't be a police officer. And what is happening is there is an emasculation, if you will, of the police taking place, especially in larger cities. New York Police Department has changed their training and are spending so many hours on de-escalation and all the political buzzword bingo phrases that they're not teaching their cops to survive. They're not teaching their cops to fight when they need to. They're not teaching their cops to be cops. This is going to have a tremendous effect on the safety of not just the citizens of these cities, but the police themselves. So what we're seeing here is a culture of confrontation. I've talked about that before, where it almost appears to be the norm now in everyday encounters with law enforcement, that people are willing to not only verbally but physically confront the police. There was just a video that came out that I'm still shaking my head, of a 67 or 76 year old woman who gets stopped by a police in a small town. They all know her. They've warned her several times about driving with a broken taillight, and they've asked her to fix it. And she keeps on saying, yeah, she'll fix it, and then never fix it. So on this occasion, the officer is going to issue her a ticket. Well, she basically initiated a confrontation and then took off. Drove away. The officer's in pursuit of this little old lady. And she stops. She's cussing at him. Then he tells her to get out of the car. She refuses to get out of the car. And this whole thing is captured, of course, on body cam. And he eventually winds up in a physical confrontation with this woman and tasers her. She looks like your grandmother, for God's sake. And so if we have so devolved as a country that everybody feels like it's okay to fight with the police, including little old ladies, this is a provocation that is going to destroy the morale of the law enforcement community. And believe me, the morale is already in the toilet. Between everything that's happened politically, between the dangers that are facing these officers, not getting the proper backup from their administrations and from their cities and their towns, and then the unending criticism from the media, the false narratives that are being thrown out there and adhered, or just people believe some of the nonsense. In fact, there was a story that came out this week that still angers me. This happened in Maine, in a small town, not a place where I would think that something like this could happen. A family put up a thin blue line flag that honors law enforcement, put it up in honor of the death of the father of the guy who put it up, who was a trooper when this man was a young boy. His father was killed, and so he was honoring his dead father. Put up the thin blue line flag, and the town told him to take it down because some people were offended and said it was racist. I mean, what are we becoming here as a nation? A flag that supports police is suddenly racist? First of all, who's the idiot that made that designation? Who's believing that narrative? And then the town has the audacity to tell a family to take it down because somebody says it's racist? We've gotten to the point where it doesn't matter what the realities of the issues are, that we can throw out that word racist and suddenly everybody jumps on the bandwagon and denounces an entire profession as being racist. It's just absurd. And the more that this takes place, it snowballs. So in Maine, this has just happened. We've been seeing the attacks on law enforcement officers significantly increase. We're seeing the disrespect of law enforcement officers, such as throwing water on them, buckets. And this isn't just happened once or twice. It's now happened numerous times. In fact, there are other cities that have now this has erupted in. Because what happens? First time it gets publicized, the officers walk away and do nothing. The reality is that they should have used whatever force necessary to take those people into custody. And if that means using their tasers or their batons or their fists, those people needed to go. And because they didn't, this is now becoming a social norm. So that's about my take on what's going on today in law enforcement with the culture of confrontation. So let's take a walk now into the interview room, where I have a great guest waiting for us. I want to tell you about a company called Law Enforcement Specialists. If you are an active duty law enforcement officer and you're looking to work extra jobs like security and traffic jobs, these are the people you need to go through. We all know that working extra jobs is what gives us the extras, gives us that little extra payment that we need, or perhaps gives us the opportunity to take our families out to dinner a little more often. And the only way to do it is to be working extra jobs. So what they do is they're all over America. I think they're in everything but a couple of states. And they work with your organization, your administration, and find off-duty jobs to work. You gotta check them out. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com, and register with them, contact them. Now, if you have security needs, this is the company you wanna go through as well. If you are looking for both security or traffic jobs, if you have a company that requires that, you wanna contact these folks as well. They're good people. They're based in Arizona, but they have police officers and services all over the country. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. I want to tell you guys about a pretty amazing product. It's called Arrest My Vest Spray. And really what it's designed to do is when you are wearing a ballistic vest, you know, it gets sweaty, it gets hot, it gets drenched, from working out in the street. And sometimes it doesn't smell all that well. And this is an amazing product that takes that odor away. And you don't even have to use it just for the vest. It takes pet odors away. It's great for your vest. It's great for your dog bed. Everything else that you need a deodorizer for, this stuff is amazing. Check it out. It's at stinkyvest.com. Go to stinkyvest.com and check out Arrest My Vest Spray and arrest the odors.
Spreading the outlaw truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, at Amazon.com.
The question I always get asked is, where do I get the energy from? Well, keeping up with Malcolm Out Loud is no easy task, friends, even for Malcolm. Well, you may know that I've personally been taking Healthy Cell for some time now. Well, the great news is Healthy Cell has a new type of natural supplement called the Nutrition Gel. So no more hard-to-swallow pills. The good-taste in gel can be mixed into smoothies, yogurt, or water. These gels provide maximum absorption of essential nutrients, and it's healthy for our gut, not abrasive like pills can be. You know, it's time for all of us to go pill-free. And you can try it with a free 2-day supply. Just cover $2.95 shipping, and the company, Healthy Cell, will cover the cost of the product. Go to healthycell.com/outloud, or simply click the Healthy Cell logo at the top of AmericaOutloud.com.
I have a special guest with me in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. His name is Brad Shepard. He's not only a 25-year veteran of the Oklahoma Highway Patrol, he is also the founder of the Warriors Rest Foundation. He's a 25-year veteran of policing and retired to the rank of captain. But what he offers now and what he's been doing with his career has touched the lives of so many in law enforcement. Brad, thank you so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
It's my pleasure. It's an honor to be here, Randy. Thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure. So there's so much to talk about when it comes down to what Warriors Rest does for law enforcement. And we're going to get into some pretty deep topics here. But before we get into that, talk just a little bit about your police career and what led you into the creation of this organization.
You bet. Yes, there is a very substantial reason why I do what I do. It's very significant to my personal journey in law enforcement. I started out my career in the early 90s, very naively thinking that I was going to serve in the law enforcement career and retire happy, and didn't realize that it was going to take a whole lot of work to be able to retire happy. I didn't see things coming in the way of trauma and emotional distress and hurdles, realistic problems that we need to talk about, and I hope that we get to talk about today. But my journey had several of significant critical incidents, several line of duty deaths that led me to a very dark and angry place within my career. Some really fine folks helped me navigate out of that, and as such, my passion and my why in life now is to help other officers navigate through their law enforcement career, if not out of dark places similar to where I was at. That is why I do what I do.
You know, the Warriors Rest Foundation is built upon peer support. Peer support, of course, is, I believe, one of the most critical issues when it comes down to dealing with all of the trauma that really every single law enforcement officer faces during his career. Do you mind sharing, you know, what you experienced that you know, that took you down this path?
You bet. One of the most significant events that occurred was a line of duty death that was very near and dear to me in 1999. I had a significant amount of survivor guilt because of that. Felt like that had I been in a position to respond with my skill set, that my partner and friend that I loved would still be here today. That was a SWAT operation, and Rocky Hills was killed on September 24th, 1999. I was not there. I was a trained sniper, and I was not at that event. And I felt very strongly that I should have been there, which in turn, there was some emotional things that were going on that I had no idea how to deal with and how to navigate out of that, which snowballed into anger. And for years, I carried that anger around with me like a friend, like a backpack. It wasn't until about 2006 that I had a very close friend really, really give me cause and pause to self-reflect and say, why am I doing this? I'm hurting myself and so many people around me. So consequently, I in turn get help, start seeking help. And through mental health professionals, things like EMDR led me to a point of being in a much healthier place. Most of that trauma, you know, it doesn't go away overnight, or you don't just make it disappear, but you learn a new normal. You need to learn a new way to navigate along with that, because you can't unsee what you've seen, you can't unhear what you've heard, you can't unsmell what you've smelled in relationship to these critical incidents. You have to figure out a way to live in harmony and peace and love with yourself and those around you. That's a little bit about that journey.
Well, I'd say that it's a pretty significant look at something that, you know, if there is one truth to be told, that is that law enforcement officers are very hesitant to seek help when they feel troubled, and there's a lot of reasons for that.
Absolutely agree.
When it comes down to it, post-traumatic stress is an injury, and just like any other physical injury, it can be treated and dealt with. I mean, the headlines every single day we're seeing about another police suicide, and you know what? So tell us about what the foundation does, because I'm in full disclosure for my listeners. I am very, very well acquainted with Warriors Rest. I have the utmost respect for Brad and his team. In fact, I have gone through the training that they offer for peer support. So let's talk about peer support and the importance of it and how Warriors Rest fits into this.
You bet. So Warriors Rest was formed as an idea 5 years ago. My friend and co-founder, Brett Key, and I came up with this idea that was not original. It was formed on a multitude of factors, those that we work with, and I'll tell you about them in just a minute, but also with some of the agencies that we work with and some of the even the nonprofit companies that we have worked with for years, gave us this idea because we saw a need. We see a need. There's a need to train up more officers in this peer support realm, giving them crisis intervention skills, but also giving them wellness dialogue that they can take to their agencies and say, hey, let's have a conversation about suicide, or let's even have a conversation about how to have a healthy marriage, have healthy relationships. Let's have conversations like this. And that was the origins of Warriors Rest Foundation. What we see today and what we have been doing over the last nearly 2 years is building peer support teams. Foundationally, that is the main precipice. One of the main precipices that Warriors Rest Foundation does and performs is helps put together, form, train, and mentor peer support teams all over the nation. We are currently involved in either building or mentoring 26 teams since we've opened our doors. We've been building teams for a long time because we are ICISF-approved instructors. We've been performing that work for a while, but under the umbrella of Warriors Rest Foundation, we're building peer support teams. Second to that is the wellness programs. We want these peer support teams not just performing crisis intervention, but we want them teaching and training proactive wellness programs and having conversations within their agencies about what we just talked about having healthy marriages and how do you raise healthy kids and how do you work a budget on a law enforcement salary, and let's talk about substance abuse prevention in a culture that is very accepted to have a beer at the end of the shift. And let's talk about how you don't become dependent on that. So we want that wellness program out there as well. And then third, we have a God-given talent to be able to do crisis intervention and perform peer support and counselors. So we actually perform peer support and crisis intervention on a daily basis. We take calls from all over the nation. In fact, I've had a call outside the United States that, hey, we need help as well. In order to do that, we have a team of people. Our team consists of, I've already mentioned my co-founder, Brett Key, but our clinical director, Dr. Kathy Thomas, who is a 30-year private practice, 25 years of those have been in the field of first responder, and she has a great story related to that. You ought to have her on your show sometime. That would be a great story for her to tell you. But the rest of our team are Gary Berryhill, who's a retired United States Marshal, who ran the United States Marshal's critical incident response team. He ran their team, and he's an outstanding presenter and instructor. And Gary Isabel is the fifth member of our team, a fantastic instructor and presenter. And then we have a variety of contractors that we use as presenters, instructors, peer support, counselor services, mental health professionals that we can utilize and send out on a daily basis to help these law enforcement officers and their families navigate this crazy career. So that, I forgot the origin of your question. We were describing Warrior's Rest, well, but you were talking about peer support. Is that right?
You got it out there. Well, you know, let's get down to a very elementary question. And this is one, this is a question that's been asked of me. We talk about peer support, but what exactly is peer support?
That's a great question. Peer support is nothing more than two officers having a conversation, one of them being trained in some type of crisis intervention, or even doesn't necessarily even have to be trained, but dating back for years and years, cops have always been very trusting of their partners and untrusting of anyone else. So that's why peer support works so well within the law enforcement community, because their partners are the ones they run to for any manner of need. So peer support is just two law enforcement officers sitting down having a conversation. What we'd like to see is that conversation being turned and pushed down the road of let's talk about some hard things. Example being we just experienced a critical incident. So let's go to the coffee shop and let's have a conversation and talk that through. What we know is I'm going to take the simple version and let's go down a very difficult path here for a minute, Randy. So let's take this conversation that we're having here. And it's very, in its very simple format, what we know to be true is the more we can tell that story, is the better it's processed. The better that critical incident can be processed in our brain and our psyche, then the less likelihood we have it to turn to a post-traumatic stress or post-traumatic stress disorder. The prevalence of PTSD within the law enforcement community is, depending on which statistic you want to seek out, but is upwards of 35% compared to the general public, which is statistically 6.7% PTSD. We are tremendously higher than the normal, than the average person walking around. Law enforcement has a very significant role. A recent study came out from the Ruderman Foundation white paper on police suicide. Said there was a study that showed the average law enforcement officer in his or her career will experience 188 critical incidents. That's significant.
Wow.
188 critical incidents. So if we back up and say, well, you know, whose definition of critical incident? Well, it is when you feel that you're overwhelmed and your coping skills are overwhelmed. Now, that doesn't mean a law enforcement officer can't handle it. It just means they're seeing these things and they're trained to stay the course. They're trained to finish the mission. They're trained to an officer safety to finish the job. what we're missing sometimes, and not all the time, but what we're missing in this, Randy, is that we're not training them how to deal with the aftermath, specifically the emotional aftermath of these 188 critical incidents within a career. And that's why Warriors Rest isn't in existence. We want to help these agencies, specifically these officers that we know they're going to be involved in critical incidents. That's why we train them. We train them at a baseline level how to shoot. Why do we teach them how to shoot? Because there's a likelihood they're going to have bad guys shooting back at them. Well, we transition that, and what we as Warriors Rest Foundation would like to see and are applying to this culture is saying, hey, let's include in this training, let's include resiliency. Let's start training our officers about the aftermath of these 188 critical incidents. What's that look like? How do you go home and have a conversation with your loved ones about what just happened? Those are hard conversations to have, mostly because we don't want to relive them, but also because we don't want to make our families worried or afraid or even experience some of those emotions that we experience.
This is a really important topic, and that is many officers believe and feel that they're protecting their significant other, their family, from the horrors that they see by not talking about it. And
absolutely,
and that's an honorable, you know, most officers are very honorable thinking people. And so the concept behind that is, you know, I'm trying to protect my loved ones, so I'm not going to talk about it. But in reality, that has the opposite effect.
Absolutely, it does. The not talking about it gives it a more likelihood of being stuck, and I use that word stuck loosely, but we use that a lot. There are things that will get stuck, and what we want to do is to unstick that. So sometimes it takes mental health professionals, therapy counselors, experts in their field to help get those things unstuck. So what, kind of going back to the PTSD statistic, that 35%, we want to minimize that. And what we know to be true is a method, not, and ours isn't the only one, but a method for doing that is getting them verbalizing the event repeatedly after the event. So when they have experienced this critical incident, and to your point, they go home, and you're right, it's very honorable to protect their family. But what we know is if we can get them conversing about this event, and specifically with their family unit, their support structure, then the likelihood of it being a long-term factor, PTSD, is minimized. It is minimized. And to your point also of not going home, or I'm sorry, going home to your family and not speaking to it, it's also been proven that your family can be vicariously, secondary, traumatized without even talking about the event. And that looks like things like behavior patterns, nonverbal communication. Your family members know something's wrong, and there's nothing they can do about it because they don't know how to help. We don't have these conversations, and what we're wanting to do is to try to educate our officers and our managers and our commanders in this field and say, let's have conversations about this. You can't just not talk about it. It's not going to go away. Matter of fact, it has the opposite effect. It will actually hinder you more by not talking about it.
No, I want
so it's a great point about the going home. Yes, I agree with you.
I want to talk about critical incidents for a minute. We use that term in law enforcement, and you gave a certain definition of it. But you know what may be a critical incident for one person simply is just another experience for another. So we don't want to get stuck in the mentality that, well, gee, my partner here saw a torn up body in a car wreck, and has been affected by it seriously. That turned into a critical incident for that officer. The first officer says to himself or others sometimes, because this can be damaging, listen, I've seen the same thing and it didn't bother me. So we need to be really accepting in this profession, that what may affect our partner may not affect us.
I have an experience that I'd like to share with you. So it related specifically to that, because I didn't share it for the longest time because I didn't want people thinking there was something wrong with me. And it's a very simple story. It was when I was working the road as a trooper. And I have two sons that are adult sons now, wonderful, beautiful young men. But when they were small, I had cause to investigate a collision. It was a grandpa and his grandson driving down the road. I don't remember the particulars, but somehow the grandson got thrown down into the floorboard and he got injured. And it was minor injury. It was cuts and scrapes. And I went to the hospital and was talking to grandpa. It was not a big deal. I walked into the other room within the emergency department. I walked into the other room and saw this young man laying on the table and cuts and scrapes and scratches all over him. And the room started to spin and I felt myself get really warm. So I walked out to get some fresh air. And what I had done is I had associated that young boy and the injuries with it to my personal life, my sons. And because of that, it had affected me. And for the longest time, I wouldn't talk about that. But what I know now, specifically to your point, what I know now is that each of us carry around with us life experiences, our own unique DNA, our own unique life experiences, our own unique training, and all the things that we've experienced, our support structure, all those things are unique to us. So you are absolutely 100% correct. A critical incident, Officer 1 sees and is not affected by it at all. Officer 2 sees and somehow may be related to it or is affected, significantly impacted by it. Those two officers, it doesn't mean one is right and one is wrong. It just is. What we have to be accepting of, and I love the way you phrased that, Randy, we have to be accepting of the fact that these officers can and will be affected at any point. You cannot go through 188 critical incidents and not be impacted by any of them. Now, having said that, to your point as well, just because you experienced a critical incident doesn't mean you're going to be heavily impacted or have PTSD from it. It is very unique to the officer and his experience and the backpack that he, personal backpack that he brings to that specific incident.
You know, I want to talk for a moment. Peer support is police helping police, and I, you know what a great believer I am in this topic. The on the other side of the coin, though, is sometimes we can be our own worst enemies. We can be very cruel to each other. Mostly unintentionally, but how do we get awareness to the 900 or 1,000 so law enforcement officers about compassionately dealing with each other?
Wow, that's a great question. And what comes to mind immediately is our very useful technique of humor. We use humor for so many things. We use humor within our culture, and at times the humor is even berating and belittling unintentionally, but the humor is used very commonly, specifically on the scene of a critical incident. Humor is used to create an emotional distance. We need those officers doing their job at whatever, wherever they're doing it, however circumstances, we need those officers holding the thin blue line, and we need them doing it effectively. So having said that, we train them, and part of the training is creating this humor. There's two acceptable emotions, humor and anger, but most of the time on scene, it's humor, and it's used. And even within your early days as an officer, you're taught, hey, just laugh this off, just laugh this off. So if you fast forward a little bit, we've now cycled that humor to a whole lot of things, almost to a malicious point, to where we will engage and humor at each other at the expense of each other almost. So to your point, how do we get those people to know and understand that people are impacted heavily? I think it's through education. I think it's through understanding of the usefulness of peer support. We're strong believers of the peer support process, but getting those peer support teams to really go out within their agencies and start dialogue of saying humor just doesn't always cut it. Let's talk about something different. Let's talk about depression. Let's talk about suicide. Let's talk about divorce. Let's talk about substance abuse and these things because we are a culture that does not go outside of itself very often. So we have to educate from the inside out, which is the peer support piece.
You know, a component to all of this is leadership. You know, when you know you can have a police department where the officers are very open to peer support training, to the concepts, but if leadership doesn't embrace it, and unfortunately, you know, through my 30-some years as a police officer, I don't know how many times I heard from, quote, leaders, unquote, hey, you know, suck it up, buttercup. You know, that kind of thought process. So leadership is essential if officers are to not just embrace the concepts of peer support, but to be there for one another. How do we get leadership on board here?
That is a great question. I think the law enforcement culture is changing. I think IACP has even endorsed the mental health challenges within law enforcement. IACP was referenced in the Rederman Foundation's white paper as having said, we need to do something about this. So I think there's a cultural shift happening within law enforcement. The last time you and I spoke, you asked a very similar question about that, and I remember thinking my view is skewed because of what I see are agencies reaching out to us to, hey, we want you to help. What I don't see are the agencies that you're talking about, which has leadership that is very narrow focused in it or almost ignoring the mental health component altogether. I don't typically see those agencies, but I know they're out there. And to your question, I think it's through a variety of things. What you're doing here with the podcast of having, hey, let's have a conversation about some really hard things. There's really a lot of focus being directed towards the suicide component now. Our suicides are now higher than our line of duty deaths. There's a lot of focus being put to that. 167 suicides in 2018, 163 line of duty deaths in 2018. So there is some awareness happening. There are police chiefs that I have received phone calls now saying I wasn't interested before, but I'm interested now.
Well, that's good to hear.
So those are all positive components of seeing and feeling that there is a cultural shift that's happening. The divorce rate has been horrible. There's just a really strong visible shift within the leadership component to say, hey, the way we did it 20 years ago doesn't work, and it sure isn't working now.
Exactly. So we're kind of getting low on time, Brad, but how can law enforcement agencies and organizations get information about Warriors Rest and avail themselves of the incredible training that you and your team do?
Absolutely. We have a website, warriorsrestfoundation.org. You can jump on the website. Check us out there. We have a Facebook site, Warriors Rest Foundation. We have a LinkedIn site, Warriors Rest Foundation. I think it's very important to say here, there's a couple varieties of, let me rephrase that. There's a couple of reasons why you would probably want to be reaching out to us. We would love to come teach and train a peer support team or teach and train in wellness and resiliency. But I also will say, if you find yourself or you have partners that are exemplifying negative behavior, reckless behavior, or changes in patterns based upon some critical incidents, jump on the website and shoot us an email, or even give us a call. We are here to help. We're here to help. We don't know you, but we love you. We love our fellow officers out there, and we want you healthy. We want you having a healthy retirement, a healthy career, healthy relationships. And we're all in this together. So if you need us, give us a call.
Well, I couldn't say it any better. I really appreciate you taking the time, Brad, to be on this program, talk about the importance of peer support. And of course, I applaud your, not only your efforts, but your dedication to the men and women of the American law enforcement community. Thanks for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
End of Watch with Randy Sutton.
Each week, we pay homage to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. We call it End of Watch. Unfortunately, I have one name to read this week. Police Officer Juan Jose Diaz of the Los Angeles Police Department in California. Police Officer Juan Diaz was shot and killed shortly after midnight in the area of Avenue 26 and Humboldt Street after taking law enforcement action when he observed several men vandalizing a wall. He was eating with friends when he observed the men tagging a wall with gang graffiti. He approached and told them to stop. A short time later, the man returned with others, confronted Officer Diaz and his friends, and brandished a handgun. The man then opened fire on the group as they tried to leave, killing Officer Diaz and wounding his girlfriend's brother. The man fled the scene and remains at large. Officer Diaz had served with the police department for just 2 years and was assigned to the Professional Standards Bureau. Police Officer Juan Jose Diaz, Los Angeles Police Department, California. End of Watch, Saturday, July 27th, 2019. Even when off duty, the commitment of this officer unfortunately resulted in the end of his life. I want to thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. We try to bring you the truth about the American law enforcement officer and the stories that are written and reported about them. I also would love for you to come onto Facebook and look me up under the Voice of American Law Enforcement. Like me, follow me. And if you haven't, please check out the website that goes along with our organization, The Wounded Blue. It's thewoundedblue.org. This is a charitable organization that assists injured and disabled law enforcement officers. And if you haven't seen our film, go to either iTunes or Amazon or the Microsoft Store and look up The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. Thanks again for tuning in. We will see you next week right here on The Voice of American Law Enforcement. Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.